This week, a marriage that's already devoid of sex, passion, and companionship is dealt a death blow by shared tragedy and worry. Welcome to My Crazy Divorce.
I'm a failure as a husband. I'm a failure as a man.
It's just, I'm beautiful and I'm bright and I deserve better.
It's a great day, I'm feeling. Possibilities of what I could, oh, do with the world at my fingertips. My imagination brings a smile up to my lips.
Oh. Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of My Crazy Divorce. I'm your host, Tom Milligan. This week's guest comes to us via Instagram and TikTok, where she shares relationship and intimacy advice with her followers. I cannot wait to introduce her. But first, as always, I have to remind you that I'm not an attorney or a therapist of any kind. What that means to you is that if you take any of my comments or thoughts on this show as legal advice or therapy, well, let's just say you're doing it wrong and you should really find a licensed and qualified professional, which might be this week's guest. Just saying. Another bit of housekeeping is I have to ask you to rate this show on whatever platform you're using right now to hear the show. And then I'm asking you to share it with at least one friend. Now, I'm not asking you to do that because I'm desperate for friends or attention. Promise. I'm asking because those two things, giving us a 5-star rating and sharing the show with a friend, is the fastest way for our show to grow. So thank you for those that have done that. If you haven't done that, please share the show with a friend right now and then go and rate the show as well. I really do appreciate it. And of course, if you have a crazy divorce story you'd like to share, pause the show right now and visit mycrazydivorce.com and click on the Apply to be a Guest button. I would love to hear from you. Okay, with all that out of the way, I want you to ask yourself a question. On a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 is you hate it with a passion of 1,000 suns, and where 10 means you love it so much you can't wait to get out of bed in the morning, how would you rate your current job? 1 to 10. I imagine that most of us fall into the maybe 4 to 6 range, which I would define as, meh, it pays the bills, right? The lucky ones get to give their jobs maybe an 8 or a 9. But regardless of how much we hate or love our jobs, most of us just have to work to survive, right? Very few of us love our jobs as much as today's guests love hers. I promise.
I'm Dr. Stormy, and I am the creator of Love Deep Lab, and I work with men, women, and couples and do sacred sexuality and intimacy and sexuality coaching. So I help men, women, and couples really to connect to their body, to their power, to have better communication, to feel connected to their aliveness and their passion in life. And that translates into the bedroom. So I always say what happens in the bedroom shows up in life, and what happens in life shows up in the bedroom. And so I have the privilege that this is my, besides being a mom to an amazing 17-year-old, this is my passion and my calling on this earth.
Well, that's pretty incredible, right? I'm actually jealous. I mean, don't get me wrong. Seriously, I love doing this show, and I love helping people save time, money, and emotions running ourdivorce.com. But I know when someone loves their job even more than I love mine. I'm not ashamed to admit it. Now, am I the only one that thinks it's pretty ballsy for someone to become a life coach? I mean, seriously, at what point does a person just wake up and think, that's right, I've mastered this life, so now I can coach others? I mean, the balls, right? Well, at least to me, life coaching is nothing compared to sex and intimacy coaching. So I ask Stormy, how did that come about?
You know, the divorce was the beginning of my journey into my own sacred sexuality, and really into my own sexuality, because I got married so young. And so really, you know, as a woman in her mid-30s, really navigating for the first time consciously, thoughtfully, sexuality. And then through my own 15-year journey, as I was doing it, I kept saying, I should teach this to people. It would be so amazing.
Okay. I love that. Now, I've never said I'm an expert at divorce. I just know my own experience and found that if I could help others follow the same path I did, that they'd have a better experience. In a similar way, Stormy's personal experience led her to help others down that same path. But unlike me, Stormy's credentials are off the charts.
I wanted to be a doctor since I was 5 years old, and I did become a doctor. I went to boarding school in the East Coast, which was intense and rigorous, to say the least. And then I went to Duke University as pre-med and was a French major and a chemistry minor, and lived in Paris and studied abroad and all these amazing things. And then I went to Africa and did medical service work for a bit, and then came back from Africa, went to medical school at Michigan State University, College of Human Medicine, and studied psychiatry there.
Chemistry, medical school, psychiatry? It's pretty intense. But Stormy didn't stop there.
We were living in California at this point, and I went back to graduate school for the second time at University of Southern California, and I got my master's in occupational therapy, focusing on sensory processing and autism spectrum disorders. And I've practiced as an occupational therapist for the last 14 years. I love Western medicine, but my work in Love Deep Lab gets to combine Western science. Is really based, it's really sound, important to me to be sound in physiology and neurochemistry, but really gets to also bring in a lot of the Eastern traditions and a lot of Tantra and Taoism and more of the sacred sexuality aspect. And I get to kind of make it this cool hybrid, because we are all hybrids, aren't we?
Wow, she's legit. I don't know about you, but I'm ready to book a session right now. We just shared Stormy's credentials, which are pretty impressive. We also covered quite a bit of her life, but we haven't really talked about Stormy or her divorce. So just who is Dr. Stormy?
I was born in Bay City, Michigan, a small town in southern Michigan, and really flat Michigan. I'm one of four, so I have an older sister, I have an older brother, and then me, and then I have a baby brother. And my mom had myself and my little brother at home. And my mom is like a tiny size zero little woman, and I was a over 10 pound baby. So Stormy right from the start, that's how I got the nickname. Stormy is a nickname, and it was a nickname since the day that I was born.
When Stormy was in third grade, the family moved from Michigan to Colorado, but her dad's work forced him to travel a lot between the two locations. And that kind of separation is tough on any marriage, and her parents divorced pretty soon after. Now, a lot of kids whose parents divorced at that age feel a huge loss from their parents' divorce. Stormy has a much more positive outlook.
When they got divorced, my dad remarried. My dad is and always will be in Michigan still, and my stepmom's this lovely, amazing woman who's been in our life for since I was a junior in high school. So a long time she's been in our life. They've been married 26 years or something like 28 years, something like that. And then, yeah, my mom is still living as well. And she's remarried to my stepfather, who is one of the most hilarious, amazing, kind humans on this earth. He actually had the longest running talk show host in Southern California. He was on the air for 23 years, the number one morning talk show. So he's great. He's a comedian and he's great. And so and they've been they got married when I was a freshman in college. So he's also been in my life for a really long time. And it's so interesting because they're married to people that are completely different than each other. And they both have really fabulous marriages. Like when I think of the marriages that I know that are really good, my dad and my stepmom are one of them, and my mom and my stepdad are another. So I feel really blessed.
I really love that she has such a great attitude about her parents' marriages. But it wasn't always a bed of roses. In fact, stay tuned to hear some of the lessons she learned from her parents' divorce. All right, let's fast forward a few years. Mom's in Colorado, dad's back in Michigan. Stormy's attending Duke University and during Christmas break goes to her dad's house for a Christmas party. And who should she see there? She sees Mike for the first time in years. Well, who's Mike? I'm glad you asked.
This one's pretty easy. He grew up in my same small town in Michigan, so I've known him my whole life. He's 7 years older than me. And so his little sister used to like babysit me at the pool. Our moms were in Bible study together. Our dads played poker together, very small town in Michigan. And we grew up together, but you know, because he was 7 years older, I didn't have any like really interaction with him, more with his sister. But I do remember being like, you know, when I was in a tweener being like, he's a cutie, you know?
So Stormy thought her babysitter's older brother was cute. That's it. Then Stormy moves with her mom to Colorado, and that really was it. until the Christmas party.
He was also there because he was working in Detroit at the time, so he came home for the party. And I remember talking to his father, who I just love, and I love his mom and his dad, but I was talking to his father, and I noticed him, and I said, is that him? Like, is that him? And his dad was like, oh boy, you know, it kind of had this little funny thing. And apparently he was doing, I heard he was doing the same to me, talking to my dad saying, is that Stormy?
Well, little Stormy isn't a little girl anymore, is she, Mike? Am I right?
We all end up going out to the bars that night. His sister was a designated driver. We were like piled in. I remember being in the way with him and, you know, flirting and chatting, but I'm at Duke. I'm a senior at Duke, and he is working for the Red Wings, and, you know, just kind of, that was it. I, you know, we didn't kiss, but we were definitely, like, flirting and way too much alcohol that night and said our, you know, goodbye, and then, you know, I was a senior in Duke, and we didn't have cell phones then, so we were, like, doing the old, like, HTML email to each other here and there. I had to go, like, to the library and, you know, use the green email, and, yeah, we kept in touch.
We all know long-distance romances are tough, right? But imagine doing it when long-distance costs 7 to 8 cents a minute. You didn't have a cell phone, there's no such thing as social media, and the best email is more like a message board on a green screen. That would really suck. So in 1988, Stormy graduates from Duke and is planning on medical school.
I said to him via email, I'm going to move to California. I'm going to take a year before going to medical school, and I'm going to go to Africa, but I'm going to go live in California with my sister in the meantime. And he was like, that is crazy, because I just took a job in Los Angeles. I said I was moving to Los Angeles, and he said, I'm moving to Los Angeles. He was moving 2 weeks before me to Los Angeles. And so I arrived in, you know, right after college, like, you know, coming out of hop from college. I was 21 years old and he was 28, and we started dating in Los Angeles, you know, pretty much right away. When we were friends, but we started dating right away in Los Angeles. So,
wow, that's really quite incredible. It really seems like the universe or God or karma or whatever higher power you believe in is pushing these two to be together.
Felt really blessed because here I am coming, living in Los Angeles. I know no one. And I was living in Westwood with one of my roommates from Duke who was also there. And I was working as a physical therapy assistant, and I didn't know anyone in LA. And I am not a big city girl. So it was quite the, like, shock and the sticker shock of how expensive everything was and just how big everything was. But it was exciting. Like, it was definitely an exciting time. And he had all these friends there because almost all of his college friends from Michigan were in Los Angeles, like almost all of them. So he had this huge network of deep friendships. And I just got to kind of roll into that. And here they're all Midwesterners, and Midwesterners are really down to earth. And so we would get together and play like euchre and, like, you know, all these Midwestern things. And so I really had this instant group of friends.
A boyfriend and a group of instant friends from back home? Could life get better? Maybe not. But it can't stay perfect, right?
Not long after we started dating, he moved to about an hour and a half south, an hour and a half with no traffic, which, if in, you know, LA is very rare, but he moved to Laguna Beach. And he was working for a .com, right at the .com bust. And so we commuted back and forth. And so there was this, like, ooh, we get to see each other. And so, like, we'd have sex, and, like, we would, like, it felt like these little, like, honeymoon periods, you know, because we'd be together for, like, Friday and Saturday, and then, you know, home on Sunday. And we would go back and forth, but we also had distance, you know. And at the time, I was like, oh, absence makes the heart grow fonder, you know. And now I'm like, no, absence makes the heart grow moldy. But,
well, crap. Now they're back to a long-distance relationship.
Laguna Beach was pretty magical and pretty special. And we'd get on the beach and that little strip of, you know, restaurants. And but we also were still really maintaining these really great friendships with all these people that he knew from college. His best friend, who was his best friend, his best friend's wife, who he was best friends with both of them, was out there. Plus, like, all these other friends from Michigan, from schools in Michigan. And so we had this really great network of friends and, you know, constantly things to do. And then we broke up. And it was right before Halloween, I remember. And I'm an October birthday. So, and Halloween's my favorite holiday. And we broke up.
What happened?
And it's so funny. I have, like, I don't really remember why we broke up. I just remember I was devastated, like non-functioning level devastated. Like my mom was like, what is wrong with you? I'm worried about you. Get your shit together. Move on. You know, that's also very my mother's approach too. She's very tough love. And I just remember being like, this is the man I'm supposed to marry. And we just broke up and I was crushed.
Well, that really sucks. I feel bad even though I don't really even know her. So what should she do?
I literally knew that this was the man I was supposed to marry and have kids with. And so I was really crushed. And so I just threw myself into like finding a program to go do service work in Africa. So I went to Ethiopia.
I love that plan. The best way to get over your own issues is to help and serve others.
We kind of started getting back together right before I went to Africa. Well, we did for sure start getting back together right before I went to Africa. But I was like, I'm going to Africa and then I'm going to med school.
Okay. Stormy and Mike are back together. But how does he feel about her leaving for Africa?
He threw my going away to Africa party with our friends, with his best friend and his best friend's wife. And, you know, it was this great costume party at this house in Brentwood. And that was my going away to Africa party.
That's cool. Good for Mike. Supporting her dreams and the recovery from the breakup.
Now I'm in fucking Ethiopia alone, the only American, and I'm living in a convent in the middle of nowhere, Ethiopia, which was amazing, amazing people. But I'm like lonely, right? And he's writing these, he's a very, very good writer. He's writing these beautiful letters because we don't have email. We have letters, which take like weeks to get there.
Nice. Letters. That sounds a lot like my Mormon mission. Except instead of 2 years, their separation was only 7 or 8 weeks.
We wrote letters. And I think every once a week I'd call home and maybe every other week I'd get to talk to him. And he was like, you know, the letters got progressively like, I screwed up. You're the love of my life from him. And me being like, still a little like, I'm not so sure. Like you literally just crushed my heart, you know, but again, I'm lonely. I'm living in Ethiopia. I'm losing weight like crazy because I got some crazy parasite. And so I came back and then it was fast and furious. Then it was like madly in love, both of us, you know, him saying I'm the love of his life and he's going to go wherever I go, which I had gotten into medical school at this point. So I'm like, you're going to go from LA to Lansing, Michigan. Are we sure that you're going to follow me? And he's like, I'm following you. I'm in, I'm all in, you know, very different than how it had been. And I was definitely in for sure. But I was like, I'm going to med school no matter what. You don't have to come along with me. We could part ways. You know, I remember laying on the beach in Laguna Beach, him laying his head in my lap and saying, do we want to do this? It's long distance. I'm about to go to medical school. And he was like, nope, I'm in, I'm coming. I'll be there. I was going in July. He's like, I'll be there by August. And that's what we did.
Well, there you go. All it took for them to be together was a little girl having a crush on an older boy, a totally chance encounter at a Christmas party in Michigan where they both liked each other, then both of them moving to Southern California at about the same time, a bad breakup, a trip to Africa, a parasite, and then total commitment. Simple, right? Happens all the time. Well, our young lovers moved back to Michigan, Lansing, Michigan, so Stormy can start medical school.
We were living in this tiny little, like, shithole apartment. It was, like, so dark. Well, I don't know if you know, but Lansing is the second grayest city in the United States next to Seattle. Like, something with the Michigan's pretty gray as a state, but Lansing is, like, obnoxiously gray. And so I'm working, like, studying and working, like, 80 to 100 hours a week. We're living in a shithole. We're broke. We're living in a shithole, nasty apartment. It was, like, I remember the carpet was, like, puke brown. And there was, like, dark and no windows. And it was, like, a shoebox. And I've never lived with anyone.
That sounds about right. Most young families start out that way, right?
I'm working, like, 80 to 100 hours a week. He's trying to do a long-distance job that's back in California. We were no money. It's gray and miserable. And, you know, we have no friends. We've just left all of our friends in California. And it was a doozy.
Uh-oh. Stormy's putting in 80 to 100 hours a week. And Mike's trying to work a long-distance job. Remember, Stormy's dad tried to do the long-distance job thing, and we know how that turned out. And making it even worse is that they'd both been away from Michigan for so long, they'd forgotten just how depressing Michigan winters can be. Remember what Stormy said early on?
So I always say what happens in the bedroom shows up in life, and what happens in life shows up in the bedroom.
Well, she's right about that.
Well, there was like 27 days of not seeing the sunshine that year, and it was sex went to hell,
Their crappy apartment, a shitty winter, and way too much work killed their sex life, which is a pretty important part of a successful relationship. But for any relationship to work, there also has to be respect and trust. If either of those is lost or broken, it's really hard to get it back.
We were young and we never lived together. He was tidier than I was, but even so, we were like, so our house was always messy. And I'm like trying to study and there's like sweaters everywhere. And I'm like, screw it. I'm going to take a break and I'm going to go into the closet, our tiny little shoebox of a closet that we're sharing. And I'm going to pull down all of his sweaters because I'm going to be the good, like, soon to be wife and fold all of his sweaters and like make it look nice, right? And I literally pull down the stack of sweaters and falls on my head three things. A little black box that was clearly a ring box literally hits me on the head. A tin of nicotine, which he had been lying about and said he wasn't doing that anymore and blah, 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 blah. And a dirty magazine, like a really dirty magazine. And literally they fall on my head. This is no exaggeration.
Mike had broken Stormy's trust and put her in an impossible situation.
I literally was like, put everything back. And tried to put it back exactly so he didn't know I'd found it, including all the other items, the contraband items. And and then we got engaged like a week later.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that wasn't the right way for her to handle it. But that was a spur of the moment decision, so I'll let it slide. But they got engaged despite the red flags?
That was such a powerful moment that now I wouldn't miss those signs. Like you were just saying, I would never miss those signs. But I was young and I was in love and I was naive and I didn't have the skills that I have now.
I think being young, in love, and naive is the holy trinity of future divorce. But for now, a romantic proposal and empty promises are fueling their relationship.
We were struggling sexually even then, like for sure we were struggling sexually. And I was like, I have no idea what to do. And he didn't have any idea what to do. And, you know, it was even our engagement was not easy. I wanted to have sex and he didn't, was basically. And so I tease a little bit, but I really did want to have sex way more than he did. And so I was like, I'm 22 years old. I'm like, you know, I'm ready to like go with like the drop of a dime. And he, and I would, so I was so hurt. I was so devastated. I took it personally, which now I roll my eyes because I'm like, it was not personal, but I took it personally. I took it as something wrong with me. And even at 22 years old, I just really started to shut off my sex drive because it hurt less than getting rejected.
Now that is something I can relate to 100%.
I tried to talk to him about it. I remember, and in my very awkward 22-year-old way, and he's like, whatever, it's fine. And I was like, oh, okay, that's the conversation we're going to have about our sex life, apparently. And I wasn't comfortable talking about it either then. I got much more comfortable over the years. But I just kept thinking, it'll get better.
Yep. You love your partner, so you just keep hoping it will get better. But it never does. Because hope is not a strategy.
We just chugged along, and that was very much the beginning of me, you know, almost entirely turning off my sex drive.
Exactly. When the partner with the higher sex drive is refused over and over and over again, their only defense mechanism is to repress their sex drive while making excuses for their partner's lack of sex drive. So, Stormy and Mike are right on schedule. And despite the broken trust and the sexual issues, they're still planning a wedding.
The engagement was, you know, the showers were great and it felt like it was bringing everyone together and it was fun to be the center of attention and all of these things while we continued to struggle in our little shoebox, dark, dingy apartment and continue to struggle with the lying and with the sexuality. And, you know, I don't have memories of us like fighting a ton because, again, it was more like I'd get upset and resentful and then he'd shut down. Like there wasn't a ton of like yelling or anything like that.
I know that looking back, Stormy can see all these red flags, but I think we all go colorblind when we're in love. And now comes the ultimate test of trust, the bachelor party. And where do boys go?
Viva Las Vegas! Viva Las Vegas! Viva Las Vegas! Viva, viva Las Vegas!
I was really nervous. I was really nervous about him cheating on me or him, you know, working with a sex worker or whatever. And so I like made my brothers go and my dad go, which they did. And literally my brother was like, I'm going to babysit him. I'm like, 100%. You have to report back to me. And that's so horrible. Like, yuck, you know? And I was a basket case when he was there. And it just like, you know, I knew they were going to have dancers and, you know, go to the strip club and all that. And I just, but what it showed me again, also I was young and didn't have the skills that I have now. Like now I'd be like, whatever, you're your own person, go do your own thing and then don't be a dick, you know? But then I was like trying to control it and trying to like, so I was a basket case the whole time he was gone. And my brother was like reporting to me that like, everything's good, you know, just a lot of drinking and hanging out. But it just showed me the lack of trust. Like it really showed me the lack of trust. I was a hot mess the whole time he was gone. And I remember I'm like, do I ask him if he cheated? And I didn't know how to handle that.
Up until this point of the story, Mike hasn't given her any reason to suspect he'd cheat on her, but I guess I can't really blame her for being worried since he's shown that he's capable and willing to lie. And if they lie about the small stuff, they lie about the big stuff. But now, it's Stormy's turn.
I was like, well, screw it. I'm going to Vegas, too. So we went to Vegas, and I remember being, it didn't help because we were at the strip joint for us, the girl, like where the men are dancing, and this woman wearing a veil, just like I'm wearing, right? We're drinking out like penis straws, and I'm wearing the veil, and I'm going to brag to be on my, you know, whatever, sparkle shirt, and I see another woman making out with one of the dancers, like maybe more than making out, but in a booth on top of him with her veil on. And I got so upset. I was also very tipsy, but I started just crying. And I thought, that woman is going to go home, not tell him, probably get married like nothing happened. And all of a sudden I was like, I need to get out of here. Like I felt like I was so sick. And then we ended up going dancing, which was much better than that situation for me.
Well, they both survived their parties and it's time to get married.
It was like my dream wedding on paper, Northern Michigan, on the lake. I was one of the first people from college to get married, so it was like a party. Like everyone came from my world and from his world. We had this really mixed world. On paper, it was a dream wedding, and I looked like a princess, and I felt like a princess. But, again, red flags, the day before, I was bawling my eyes out. Because he had gone golfing with the guys and hadn't been communicating. I didn't know where he was, and I'm waiting. And my mom says to me, Stormy, you should not be bawling the day before your wedding. It was 2 days before, the day before the rehearsal dinner. And I just remember being like mad at her because I couldn't be mad at him.
It's hard to know if she was just having pre-wedding jitters or if she was really that controlling. We'll never know, but regardless, Stormy wasn't the only one having issues in the days leading up to the actual ceremony.
My stepdad took him out that night, because it was the kind of the night everyone was rolling into town, besides like the wedding party, and said to him, Stormy is a lot of woman. She is so much like her mother. Are you sure that this is what you guys should be doing? Are you sure you are ready to love that strong of a woman?
Wow, stepdad, that's a great question to ask. But did you have to wait until the night before the wedding? Anyway, Mike said he was ready and that he wanted to move forward. So we're all set, right?
I knew. I remember sitting there crying, and I remember where I was sitting and praying and saying, I should not do this. But I was like, I'm a codependent in recovery. And I was like, everyone's here. Everyone's flown here. This is a really expensive wedding. And the wheels were already rolling. But I remember being like, I shouldn't do this. I shouldn't do this. Like knowing that.
How many times have we heard that on this show where one or both parties are having serious doubts right as they walk up the aisle? It's crazy that we do that, right? So why do we do it? Anyway, Stormy goes through with it, and the wedding goes off without a hitch.
Our wedding night, my mom took me home, and I didn't have sex on my wedding night, and took me home and like used a little bobby pin to undo all the like little eye hook snaps out of my gorgeous Vera Wang dress, and I cried myself to sleep. And I remember all I wanted to do was like consummate the marriage. Like, I don't know, somehow that felt really important to me. But really, I just wanted to have sex with my now husband. And he was out. He stayed out. And if that isn't a red, he came in later, but I went home with my mom. And if that isn't a red flag, I'm not sure what is.
Oh my hell. That's just sad. I mean, come on, Mike.
Yeah. And I just remember literally being like, maybe we'll have sex in the morning. Like really like hoping that we were going to get to make love as husband and wife, which we did. But I like remember I was just devastated.
Yeah, I'll bet she was devastated. That's not a great way to start things out, Mike. After a great honeymoon to Costa Rica, our newlyweds come back to Michigan where they've rented a nicer place and also got a puppy. Because why not?
It was maybe like a month after we got married. We just got a puppy. So like, let's just fucking be in med school, get married. We had we were renting a house. We were now out of this shitty apartment in like a less shitty house. And we had a puppy. I'm like, oh my God, we were like, shoot me in the head. What? Like a 6 week old puppy. And I remember taking the puppy to the park and calling my mom crying because he had continued to like lie. And I continued to like catch him in lies. And they were small lies, but, like, it didn't matter. It had the same impact. At this time, they were small lies. And it had the same impact to me and my trust. And I'm, I really value honesty. And as I've gotten older, I value it the most. And having conversations when they're hard. When they're easy. But how do you communicate when they're hard? And we did not. And so I remember saying to my mom, crying. And she's like, honey, if you want to end this marriage, this is like a month after we got married. She's like, we will support you. And I was like, no, I love him. No, I love him. I love him so much. And my mom literally says to me, once a liar, always a liar. And she says, honey, this is going to be a long road and we are here for you. And wow, was she right.
So Stormy isn't happy, but she's sticking with it. Mike's working, Stormy's in med school, and they're raising a dog together.
We decided, because I have some fertility issues, this is actually like, literally God has a sense of humor. So I have some fertility issues, so I knew that I needed to have kids early. So here I am in in my third year of med school, and I'm like, and the doctor's like, if you're going to have kids, you need to do it now.
This episode of My Crazy Divorce is brought to you by OurDivorce.com. Did you know that in the United States, a divorce is finalized about once every 42 seconds? Since the average divorce pays attorneys more than $11,000, that's more than $8 billion paid to divorce attorneys every year. No wonder attorneys try so hard to convince us that we can't get a divorce without them. OurDivorce.com has made it their mission to provide the most affordable, easy-to-use, and effective self-service divorce process ever imagined. For just $299, OurDivorce.com's proprietary three-step process guides divorcing couples through the entire divorce process and provides the divorcing couple with a complete set of divorce papers, along with easy-to-follow filing instructions for their state. $299 is a great price, but what's really amazing is they don't charge anything to use their service unless it works for you. Will your attorney make that guarantee? Probably not. If you or someone you know is thinking about divorce, visit OurDivorce.com today to get started for free. That's OurDivorce.com and click Get Started.
So I have some fertility issues, so I knew that I needed to have kids early. So here I am in in my third year of med school, and I'm like, and the doctor's like, if you're going to have kids, you need to do it now. And I'm like, oh, shit. So we decide to try. And we're trying.
So their sex life was already for shit, and now they have the added burden of trying to have a kid? I think that just sucks.
Anyway, so we can't get pregnant. And so then I start getting all this testing done. And then one of the doctors was like, you know, we should get him tested too. And I'm like, no, it's me. It's always been me. I mean, I've had issues, reproductive issues since I was like 16. And turns out he has just as significant of issues as I did, but we never knew it. He never knew it. He has no vas deferens. No vas deferens. Impossible. Impossible to get pregnant, which is, he always jokes, was a good thing he didn't know that, you know, when he was in his 20s. But we're laughing. We're like, we are two peas in a reproductively shit show pod, you know, like, but in a sense that actually like aligned us, because it no longer felt like me or my body failing or him or his body failing. We really actually like, that was somewhere we connected.
Well, okay. Seems like an unlikely thing to bring them together, but hey, whatever it takes, right?
So we did in vitro, we did high tech in vitro, we did ICSI times two. We had no money. We're spending all of our money on in vitro. I'm like a fucking crazy woman because I've got so many hormones in me. Literally felt like I had a tenuous grasp on reality because I'm like so pumped full of hormones. Looked like I was 3 months pregnant. You know, it just, I'm working 100 hours a week. Like none of this was good. I remember sliding down the counter, like the cupboards in the kitchen, cupping my head in my hands, just sobbing and being like, this is what it's like to go crazy, like to lose your mind. And it was just, you know, I was so pumped full of hormones and it was just emotionally and financially so hard. And we wanted a baby so badly. We both wanted it. And we both knew that, like, intuitively, like, that's why we were together. And so we're like, give us this kid already, you know? And, yeah, so two rounds of ICSI, and then I remember when we found out we were pregnant, and it took, we were 12 weeks pregnant, so my child was frozen, because he was the second round of ICSI, and it was the last of the embryos we had, so this was like our last shot, and I just knew I was pregnant. I was having dreams about it, I just knew I was, and I remember him, my ex-husband, saying, I did it, like celebrating. And I couldn't help myself. I was like, yeah, you and like six PhDs at University of Michigan, but okay. You know, like, yeah. So we were over the moon. We were beyond over the moon. I gained 100 pounds because I didn't give a shit. 100 pounds with like 2 weeks left. So, you know, the whole 35-pound healthy weight gain. Just like, I was like, can we stop weighing me? Because clearly I've blown the healthy weight gain. I mean, I think we were just so excited. And it really was like this awesome part of our marriage. We were so happy to be on our way to becoming parents.
Well, that's fantastic. Maybe this will bring them closer together as a couple.
And then we had my son. And then I had a near-death experience. I bled to death when I had, well, to near-death when I had my son. Like left my body, had the whole... saw the whole thing from outside of my body, saw my ex-husband, my then husband, saying like, don't go. Like he thought I was dying because they said I was dying. I had 11 blood transfusions and like, anyway, this surgeon saved my life and barely. And so it was like, it's just so funny. It's like this, it doesn't surprise me. Like here comes my son into the world and I like die, have a near death experience, like a true NDE. And but in a sense that like made me so grateful, well, made me so grateful to come back into my body and be his mom, but also made me grateful for my marriage. Like I felt like I wasn't ready for them to be dead or for the marriage to be dead. And so there was this kind of renewed, you know, commitment on my part to the marriage.
Holy shit. Nothing like dying to make you appreciate the life you have, right? Spoiler alert. Stormy lived.
And then 3 months later, my son went to stage 4 heart failure and the world completely fell apart.
Oh, no. Another spoiler alert. Her son survives and is alive and well to this very day. But how did our couple handle the added pressure?
The number one reason for divorce is the death or serious illness of a child. And that was what we were struggling with, was my son in and out of heart failure and very touch and go and a very rare heart disease. There's only like 33,000 people alive with it. And so it was catastrophic to our marriage. We could not understand how the other person was dealing with it. We could not respect or be kind to how the other person was dealing with it. And me just as much as him. I thought he was in denial. He thought I was being totally negative and dramatic. And we just, so here we're like fighting for our son's life and our son is fighting for his life. And it was just really, it took our marriage that was already really hard and like just tanked it.
This isn't good at all. Any parent of a sick kid knows they'd drop anything and everything to take care of their child. So Stormy takes a hiatus from med school to learn everything she can about her son's condition.
I'm a scientist, so I'm reading everything I can, and there's nothing, at the time, there was nothing good to read about this disease. The disease was that they were going to die, right? Or end up with a heart transplant.
Wow. Things are not looking good at all. Stormy tried everything she could think of, including applying for experimental treatments. Eventually, their son would get stable, and she'd go back to school. But then he'd go into heart failure, and she'd pause school to be with him, knowing every single time that it might be her only chance to be with him before he died. Then the cycle would repeat. What a roller coaster. There is literally no way this was good for the marriage.
So it was just like, it was just awful. And my ex-husband was like, so I handle it, like, give me all of the facts and give me the worst case scenario so I can start to steel myself and prepare myself and feel myself to that. And then anything else is like frosting. I got it. He has the exact opposite approach, which is I don't want to hear anything negative or any possible negative outcome. So I'm just going to, you know, keep going on because he's here and I love him. And we just like, and instead of both of them being really beautiful approaches, which we could not see at the time, I judged and blamed him and thought he was being ridiculous and in denial and irresponsible. And he thought I was being morose and, you know, catastrophic and, you know, just dramatic.
While we never had to deal with a sick child, my ex and I struggled with handling big issues. She would spend what seemed like to me forever planning for every possible outcome, mostly negative, while I would just jump in and hope for the best. She called her approach disaster prevention, and mine was called disaster recovery. Over the 18 years we were married, we mostly figured out how to appease both methods. But like I said, we had 18 years to figure that out, because we weren't dealing with a dying child. I can't even imagine. But their son's heart condition became all-consuming. And while it didn't cause their divorce, it laid bare the realities of their relationship, or the lack thereof.
One time we went on a date. We had a lot of help with family because my son was so sick. And we went on a date and we didn't really have any money. We went to this little Italian restaurant in the little town we were living in. And I remember it was just like dead silent, like not a word. And I'm like, how fast can I eat my pasta? How quick can I drink my wine? Because it's like painful, not like lovely silence, like strained, painful silence. And I remember looking across the table to him, like the red and white checker tablecloth. And I said, can we just talk about something? Like, we're out, we don't have our child with us. And I was like, and I don't want it to be about our child. I don't want to talk about our child. And he says to me, well, what do you want to talk about? And I just said, nothing. And then we ate the rest of the meal in silence. And that was like, you know, 3 years, or I guess 4 years at this point into our marriage. And it was just like that. We didn't have, he is a phenomenal father. And to this day, I feel incredibly blessed. Like, we co-parent almost beautifully, almost seamlessly. But we were not married well at all, you know, we were just incompatible in every single way, except for our family of origins being pretty similar. Otherwise, we didn't have a single compatibility.
Look, before we continue going with the story, here's Stormy with an update on their son. Now, remember, he had intermittent heart failure for the first 18 months of his life. And to make things even more difficult, he's also been diagnosed with autism.
He still lives with this heart condition now. He takes heart failure drugs even now, but he's like this little walking medical miracle. But at the time, we had expected his life to be short. So we were like orienting around that. That's why I stopped medical school. And, you know, I thought he'd die and I'd go back to school. And then now he's going to be 18 next week. So... No, it's really interesting, this disease. It's like the fact that he hasn't died or had a heart transplant puts him into the 33% of people who live with this disease. And he takes really gnarly heart failure drugs every day. He will his whole life. And so we don't know the long-term prognosis on that, but they want to keep him from having a heart transplant as long as possible. And he's doing really great with it. I mean, as of like a couple years ago, his heart was for the first time ever not enlarged. Like, he had grown into his heart. So he had like the size of a, you know, 16-year-old's heart when he was 2 years old, and now he's almost 18. He's grown into his heart. So his heart doesn't function normally. His heart function's not normal, but you would never know it. He's really an incredible. He's my greatest teacher on this earth for sure. And don't get me wrong, he can still be an 18-year-old pain in my ass. But
so you're saying even kids with heart conditions grow up to be a pain in the ass to their parents? Who knew? I'm just glad he's doing so well. And I can just hear and see the love Stormy has for him. It's actually kind of inspiring. Now that the good news is out there, let's just get back to the ugly story. I know, sorry about that.
We moved to California after I finally graduated from med school. So it took me 6 years, not 4. Graduated, took my licensing exams, took my boards, took my clinical skills exam, got my doctorate. I was like, yay! You know, even though at the time I was like, I'm not going to practice medicine. I'm going to be with my son, with our son. So we moved back to California. We moved back to LA because we had amazing friends there. I had family, my sister, my mom and stepdad, they were all there. I had stepsisters there. We had a huge network in Los Angeles and San Diego. So we moved back. We had no money. Again, not the best. We didn't really think that one through because we moved from Michigan to LA where the cost of living is nothing in comparison. So we're broke again and living in LA, and I'm not working in medicine. He's now working on site for the job that he had done remotely my whole time we were in Michigan, and we're back with all of our friends.
Okay, so they're broke, but they're with family and friends. And let's not discount the importance of being away from those nasty Michigan winters. Life should be pretty good. Hopefully this is the turning point for their marriage. Yeah, right. There's never a turning point on our show. At least, not a turning point for the better. I hope you know that by now.
We are not doing well. Our marriage is not doing well. Like I said, we don't have any money. My son is like, his autism is really intense. We have no support for it. I was like, I have a little demon child. And he like, I mean, so he's out of control and hitting his head and I'm not working and he's barely working and we have, no finances. And our friends, his best friend, who is the best man in our wedding, and his best friend's wife, who was a bridesmaid in my wedding, and the four of us are like best of best friends. And our sons are 2 weeks apart and they are best friends. And we are with them multiple times. I'm with her because she's a stay-at-home mom and I'm a stay-at-home mom at this time, multiple times a week. And he has an affair with my best friend, his best friend's wife. And it is like a Jerry Springer episode.
Ouch. My ex cheated on me twice with my, quote, friends. Cheating is bad enough, but when it's with a friend, it's a double whammy.
They did not have penetrative sex. They had all other kinds of sex because I caught them the day before they were going, of all places, to Vegas for the weekend to have wild sex all weekend long. So they actually did not ever get to have penetrative sex. But and again, to me, though, I was like, that was one of his things. I was like, well, we didn't actually have sex. And I was like, you kissed her down there. She kissed you down there. Now we're splitting hairs.
Yeah, that's splitting hairs for sure, Mike. I think Mike must have taken a lesson from former President Bill Clinton when denying infidelity.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Here's an important message to anyone who thinks cheating is normal or justified, or anyone who thinks it's okay as long as it's non-penetrative sex. You're wrong. It hurts. In fact, it may hurt even worse because it's an emotional affair. Don't kid yourself.
And for me, it didn't matter. It didn't matter, like, if they had just kissed. Like, the emotional affair and the betrayal of my friend, which felt way more painful than of my husband, because we were, like, not even, we didn't even like each other by this point. I mean, not that it's not an excuse, but I felt way more betrayed and way more hurt by her, because she was my person. She knew all of our struggles, including our sexual ones. And it was vicious. It was manipulative and vicious. And it was, in my opinion, actually evil. Like, it was premeditated and it was really intense. And we, the four of us, plus all these other friends, were like all best friends. And so it just destroyed so many layers upon layers. Like, the onion just didn't stop. Like, the onion of betrayal just did not stop.
Exactly. The pain and betrayal doesn't stop even if it was, quote, non-penetrative, Mike. So how did Stormy catch the cheaters anyway?
I will never forget the moment I found out or how I found out. Thank God I have this mind that like memorizes phone numbers, because unfortunately I knew her phone number by heart and that's how I found it. Text messages. And it was the night before Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to her. I had to call. Well, I threatened to call her husband and tell him, because we were all getting together at 7 a.m. that next morning to go down to Laguna Beach for Father's Day. The two of us, couples, and our kids. And I said, if she shows up here, I will punch her in the face. So you have until, this was at like 5 in the morning. I'm like, you have 2 hours. If she shows up here, I will punch her in the face. And that was, and then I was like, happy Father's Day. And I kicked him out. And that was intense.
Yeah, I think separation is a good idea. I still don't get why Stormy and most women feel like it's their right to kick the husband out, but hey, that's a different discussion. But I can't blame her for needing him out of her face and wanting to punch her now former friend in the face. I totally understand that feeling, actually.
When we split, so I kicked him out and also was very mad. So I was like, you will not see your son because you are a cheating sack of shit, lying sack of shit.
Stormy, no. Don't use your kid against your husband. That's not fair to your son.
And then I caught myself pretty quick because, like I said, the one thing he, well, not the one thing, many things he has going for him, but he is a phenomenal father. So I realized quickly that I was like, I didn't want to use my son as a pawn. So I quickly started letting him visit our child and I would leave. He'd come over and I'd leave and give him like the time or he, you know, this is when we were not permanently separated. I just kicked him out. I didn't care where he went. I didn't give a shit if he was on the street or whatever. I was just happy I didn't like smack him with a frying pan.
Oh, thank God. Good for you, Stormy, for coming to your senses. But Stormy did lay down the law in terms of her former friend.
And I said to, as we were apart, we were separated. And I said, if you date her, if you start dating her, she will never be around my son. So you might want to factor that into your decision making, because she will never be around my son, our son. And so, no, they never dated. And ironically, she's now married to one of his friends.
So at this point, Mike and Stormy start a co-parenting relationship and having some conversations.
I get sexuality and sexual temptation. I am a sex coach, but we have consequences and you learn to work with your sexual energy. And this was our, like, this was my closest girlfriend, at the time. And, I took him back.
Whoa. She took him back. I'm not judging, especially since I forgave my ex twice, but I also never wanted to hit her with a frying pan. So there's that.
I don't regret that, because the best year and a half of our whole marriage came after that. And so it took me some time to like let him back in. And my family was like, what are you doing? You know? And we went to therapy and we were really involved in this church, and the church was really involved, and all of a sudden he finds God. And I don't mean to be that. I don't know what it felt pretty dramatic. He all of a sudden found God, which was awesome for me because I have a really deep relationship with God. And so he's like meeting with a pastor weekly and we're in therapy, and it was the best year and a half of our marriage, even though we were navigating through betrayal and like my complete destruction of trust and all the dissolution of like all of our friendships, because people had to choose sides and no one wanted to choose my side because I'm still with him and he's the one that they all knew what happened. Obviously it came all out very Jerry Springer like, and so people were choosing sides. So we really lost all of our friendships, in that group. But I don't regret that, because I don't believe that he and I could co-parent as beautifully as we do.
Well, Mike and Stormy are trying to make it work, and it sounds like they're moving in the right direction. Good for them. But then something happened. Something always happens that is the last straw, right?
It never is what you think it's going to be. Like, it wasn't an affair with my best friend, which would have been a good final straw, you know, would have been pretty like understandable. It was actually a catalyst. An old boyfriend of mine from Duke. I had gone to visit my brother in New York City, and I was like, he and I had been like, you know, via email. He had been married. He was divorced, so he's single. He's my old boyfriend. It was like the first love of my life. So he's like, let's meet up when you're there. So I tell my brother, I'm like, I still kind of have this little crush on him, so I'm taking you with me as like backup. My brother's like, great, you know. So we all go out. My brother, after like And Auer was like, he's such a good guy. You're fine. I'm leaving. So he and I spend the evening together just chatting, totally platonic, no boundaries crossed. But he walks me to the cab. And it's like 2:30 in the morning and we've had way too much to drink. And he kisses me on the forehead and he says, I hope your husband knows what a catch he has. And he said, stop using your son as an excuse. Your son is going to be just fine when you guys split up. And I was like, oh, okay. Probably needed to hear that. And he was right. And I just started crying and got in the cab and went back, woke my brother and my sister-in-law up, climbed in bed with them. And I just am crying. And I said, I can't do this anymore. I'm done. And my brother and my sister-in-law were like, we want our sister back. We haven't seen our sister. We haven't seen you in so long. So we support you. And I flew home and lost my courage on the flight home, like prepared and cried what I was going to say. I'm ending a 12-year relationship, 10-year marriage, and I'm dissolving our family unit.
Wow. That had to be a long flight.
That had a lot of weight for me. And so I get up the courage, and then I get home, and I see him, and I see our son, and I see our beautiful home, and I lose all my courage. For a moment, because I'm like, I've been gone all week. I want to have sex. Maybe we can connect. And he turns me down.
Ugh. She knows it's time to end it, but loses her courage. And Mike missed the signs that she just needed to be close to him. That's just sad in so many ways.
I go downstairs and I'm crying and I'm hurting and I'm like, I just decided to end the marriage and then I copped out and I don't remember what happened, but I somehow check, like, I go to get on the internet and, like, all these porn pop up, like, in, like, yucky porn. And I'll never forget. I remember what I was wearing. I was wearing this, like, robe, and I looked at the screen, and I look upstairs where he's sleeping, and I was like, I'm done. And I march up the stairs, and I sit on the edge of the bed, and I said, this marriage is over. I'm done, and I want a divorce. And he like sits up, he's kind of sleeping. He's like, no, you don't. And I was like, no, I do. And then I went downstairs and slept downstairs. And then that was it. But it's so interesting that after all of this, it was porn, which it wasn't really porn. The last straw, it was just this moment of clarity where I was like, this marriage is done. And it was so interesting because it was really dispassionate. And I am fiery. I mean, I'm a blonde Lebanese and I am fiery. And it was like, I just knew.
Remember earlier in the interview when Stormy seemed totally unaffected by her parents' divorce? Well, that's not really the case. Divorce always affects everyone involved. There's just no getting around it. First, Stormy made the promise we've heard so many times on this show.
I literally said, I'm never getting divorced. Definitively never. And I'm really stubborn and I stick to those things. And I was probably like 8 or 9 when I said that.
And second,
my parents' divorce really impacted me and, you know, contributed to my staying in a marriage far longer than I should have. Me, I stay too long. That's my pattern. But when I'm done, I'm really done. And I was done.
Yeah, she stayed too long. But hindsight is often 20/20. Remember when Stormy decided to clean the closet and all that junk fell on her head?
And I'm standing there in the closet and I'm looking down at this clearly black ring box, which was obviously an engagement ring, a tin of nicotine and a dirty magazine. And it's just, again, in hindsight, like that represented so much of our marriage because it was like, what did I do? Focus on the ring box. Focus on the beautiful diamond. Ignore everything else.
Too many of us ignore the ugliness of our relationships and just focus on the shiny parts. That's not a good thing. So Mike and Stormy are done, but money was still pretty tight, so he couldn't afford his own place. So they were separated, but they stayed in the same house for a few months.
Finally, I had to say, like, I'm not asking you to leave any longer. Like, don't let the door hit you on the way out. Like, you know, you have to get your own place. Like, this isn't good for our son. This is not good for me or you. But there was not fighting. Like, I was bizarrely, fabulously, magically detached at this point. And I remember saying to him, no matter what you say or do, I will not fight with you anymore. I will not fight with you and I will not cry anymore. And it wasn't like a repression. I just cried enough. I had enough crying. And so it was really, it was really more like a business transaction, like logistics at this point. I don't know what it was like for him, but for me, that was the experience. And so I sort of forced him to leave, or really highly, strongly encouraged him to leave. And he got a studio apartment just down the street.
Now that they're truly separated, they can start building a real co-parenting relationship. But as happens all too often, religion sticks its nose where it just doesn't belong.
My relationship with God is still my most important relationship in my life, but I will never be a part of organized religion again, because what happened in our church was as painful as what happened in my divorce. And they basically were like, we cannot support you leaving your marriage. They like shunned me, literally, because they're like, because it's not biblically sound. And I was like, pretty sure the Bible says infidelity is the one reason you get an out on marriage, you know? But they were like, yeah, but it's not about infidelity. And I was like, is there a timeline on the like healing from infidelity? Like, I was beyond hurt. And all my friends were in this church, and you know, our pastor and his wife came over one night, and I was like, nope, you don't get to come in my house because you were going to try to convince me otherwise. And that is not loving someone. And what kind of Christian principle does that teach? And like, it was really hurtful. So that whole world fell apart for me.
You know, I'm no expert, but I'm pretty sure that is not how Jesus would have handled it. Great job, Christians. So what about the actual divorce?
We decided to use a moderator and a mediator. Thank you. We decided to use a mediator, and we like had nothing to mediate. Like, the guy was like, this is the easiest mediation ever. Like, we had no assets, and we had already like decided, like, I had student debt. And so we decided to split that. And literally he and I went out for coffee afterwards, and my mom was watching our son, and that was it. I mean, the guy was literally like, this is the easiest mediation I've done.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this is another story where the divorce itself is actually pretty tame. But it's the story leading up to it that's totally crazy. I often say that anyone who's ever been divorced knows that the divorce isn't over when the judge signs the document. In fact, that's just the beginning of the divorce, especially if you have children. That means if you have a shitty divorce process, you're usually stuck in an equally shitty post-divorce life and co-parenting situation. So if you learn anything from this show, I hope you'll listen to this next clip from Stormy describing the relationship between Mike and Stormy today, which was made possible only by their amicable divorce.
Like I said, we co-parent almost seamlessly. We only interact about our son, like, we're not friends, but we're friendly. Our families still, like, when they come, his family comes, I still go over and say hi. He comes and sees my family. Like, we co-parent almost seamlessly, which is so fascinating, because our marriage was a shit show and volatile and conflictual, and yet our divorce was not.
All right, we went through Stormy's credentials earlier in the show, so I won't repeat them here. Just remember that when someone like her offers advice, you really should listen.
I think the advice to anyone listening that's maybe in a marriage, and maybe it's a good one, hopefully it's a good one, I hope that for you, or it's not, and you're listening because you're struggling in your marriage, or you're going through a divorce, you know, or you're post-divorce and out there dating again, is that to do your own work. And that might sound like horrible advice, because you're like, wow, I'm in like freaking drudges. How can I possibly do work? But when you turn the focus to yourself, and the fact that, and I say this with like a lot of tenderness, but it is also provocative, is that I'm the common denominator in all of my relationships. I'm the common denominator in all of my failed relationships. But I don't judge or shame myself for that. I turned that into like, what do I want to work on in myself? Like, I'm a perfectionist in recovery. I'm a codependent in recovery. And now I say I'm in recovery because I don't have those patterns anymore, or at least I don't allow them for very long. I catch them really quickly. So like I've said many times today, like in hindsight or looking back, or now I would have done that differently. But that's because I've done a lot of work. I mean, I've been in therapy and been a coach and gone to different retreats and read a million books and take all these courses. Whatever your path is might be different. But when you start to do your own work and really like learn to, and it's going to sound cliche because it's true, is like learn to really love yourself, including your like shitty parts, not just like your sparkly parts, like including your stuff, like your triggers and your traumas. You will, first of all, you become wholly and magically and wonderfully responsible for your own pleasure. And I'm talking about in and out of the bedroom, okay? And you don't have to be with a partner to have amazing pleasure in and out of the bedroom. But once you start to take that responsibility, that really deep personal responsibility and accountability, you will become your best you. And then you're going to draw in a very different partner than if you continue in the shadows, if you continue doing the same thing, right? Like Albert Einstein said, it's the definition of insanity to do the same thing and expect different results. And so, and again, looking at that with compassion, not like, oh, I'm such an idiot, or I should have known better, or I should have, you know, done differently. It's like the past is past, but what are you going to do with the present and the future? So really turning that inward, like really turning that as like, this is your time. And if you're in a relationship, the relationship will get better because you are being true to yourself. You are growing and developing yourself. Or you're going to see that your partner is not growing with you, and you're not, you're growing on very different trajectories, and maybe parting the relationship is what is needed. But if you keep doing your work, the path becomes really clear. And then also if you're out there and dating or going through a divorce, and you also will draw in a very different kind of partner.
Wow. Just based on her advice alone, I can tell she's good at what she does. Just don't forget her credentials, though. Stormy's the real deal. So check out her website at lovedeeplab.com. And be sure to follow her on TikTok at touchysubjects with 3 S's there at the end. Or on Instagram at lovedeeplab. I hope you've enjoyed this week's show as much as I have. If you did enjoy it, please make sure to give us a 5-star rating on whatever app you're using to listen to us right now. That really does help. Also, be sure to share the show with a friend. I also want to thank OurDivorce.com for their generous sponsorship of the show. So if you or someone you know is considering a divorce, go to OurDivorce.com right now and click on Get Started. It doesn't cost anything unless it works for you, so you have nothing to lose. And finally, if you have a crazy divorce story you'd like to share on our show, go to mycrazydivorce.com right now and click on the Apply to be a Guest button. I'd really love to hear from you. That's our show for this week. Thanks for listening. See you next week, everyone.
Possibilities of what I could, oh, do with the world at my fingertips. My imagination brings a smile up to my